Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So this week on The Brian Lehrer Show, we've been doing a pretty good impression of the public radio program Speaking of Faith. We talked to Karen Armstrong about the spirituality of nothing on Monday, Robert Putnam about God and politics on Tuesday, and Sam Harris on his strongly atheist take on science and morality on Wednesday. And today we're going to finish up our unofficial This Week in God series with maybe a middle ground approach. After all these people with strong opinions on religion, after all of them, Michael Krasny, host of KQED's public radio show Forum with Michael Krasny in San Francisco, has written a deeply personal story of his own journey through religion, and it is called Spiritual Envy, an Agnostic's Quest. And many of you who have ever been in the San Francisco area and have come here have said, oh, Brian Lehrer, he's sort of New York's Michael Krasny. Michael, welcome to the East Coast Air. Very nice to talk to you.
Very good to talk to you, Brian. I'm glad to be here.
And agnostics, seekers, give us a call on your stories of faith, faith interrupted, navigating an increasingly polarized or ambiguous world of religion for you, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Michael, my first question is, why spiritual envy? Do you envy people who are not agnostics?
Well, I envy people who have the consolation of faith and some of the certainty that goes with faith, and I also envy people even who are on a spiritual quest or have a kind of paradigm that they're seeking. I just felt it was time to say, I don't know. My dad told me when I was a kid, it takes courage to say, I don't know. And I remember Studs Terkel saying to me that an atheist, that he was an agnostic, and that meant he was a cowardly atheist. And I thought, no, it takes some courage to say you don't know. And that's really what I'm doing here. I'm saying, well, Nancy Reagan said, just say no to drugs. And I'm saying, just say, I don't know where God is concerned.
You know, I know people who are agnostics or atheists who really do say they envy people who have faith because they think faith buoys people in some ways as they face the inevitability of death or other kinds of things. And they say, but, you know, I'm not a believer. I wish I believed, but I'm not a believer. Do you experience that envy since you put it in the title of your book?
That's a lot of the essence of spiritual envy. I think you just nailed it. That sense of our mortality and what our mortality means. I'm more existential in my thinking, and not necessarily a kind of Kierkegaard or Buber existentialist, but maybe more along the continuum toward simply, again, not knowing. And I do envy people who, as I said, have the solace of faith and have the certainty of knowing where they're going after this is all over, or thinking that there's something that is there for them that they can aspire to and that is watching over them.
On our Facebook page, Peter writes, I was raised Episcopalian. I began questioning the existence of God when everyone in my seventh grade class laughed uproariously at Greek mythology principle, if you can mock one God, you can mock another God. Then the question of hell deepened my doubt. What kind of a God would send someone to hell, whatever their iniquity? So hell went up in smoke. So that's one of our listeners' spiritual journey to agnosticism. Was yours anything like that?
Well, not quite like that, Brian. The amazing thing about this book, though, to me, is the number of narratives and stories that it's elicited. People wanting to tell you, I had faith, I lost it, I was born a red diaper baby, I found faith. I mean, we've been hearing such a wide panoply of stories, it's really remarkable. But my story is more one, I suppose, of maybe a more common archetypical story in some ways. I grew up with a strong sense of being a believer in God. My parents were conservative Jews, and they certainly gave me a sense that God was looking over me and taking care of me in moments of helplessness or foxhole moments and that sort of thing. And then I came upon Nietzsche and Darwin and Schopenhauer and as an aspiring intellectual, and things started to shift. And particularly Dostoevsky had a great effect on me because even Karamazov saying, if God does not exist, anything is permissible. And then suddenly I found myself dealing with these rather extraordinary questions and compelling questions of good and evil. So that's been my journey. I've also looked back to my childhood when I was abused by sixth grade teacher who was a Cockney Brit who would sort of take me as an ADHD kid into the bathroom across the hall and literally beat the hell out of me. And at the time, I didn't tell anybody about it, but I thought God knew about it, and God knew I was trying to be good, and God knew I was really aspiring to goodness. And later on, I looked back on it, and I thought, well, again, Dostoevsky, how does a good, compassionate, loving God allow a child to be abused or to be hurt? How does a good, compassionate God allow for hurricanes and earthquakes? And, you know, these are theodicy questions. That's what philosophers call them. And they don't have any answers, unless, of course, you stop believing in a concrete God or an anthropomorphic God, and you just say, this is the way things are.
How about the word agnostic? People who are believers, I've had this conversation with several believers in God who say, oh, don't try to give me this line that agnostics are somehow neutral and in the middle. Either you believe or don't believe. And if you don't believe, then you're an agnostic or atheist, same thing. Have you had that conversation with anybody?
I have had that conversation. I've had agnostics who have been kind of the more militant agnostics of the Dawkins and Hitchens school, and I'm sure, like me, you've interviewed them.
And you wouldn't call them atheists?
Oh, no, I would call them atheists. They're atheists because they're trying, in a sense, to prove a negative. They're saying there is no God, and they're also very contemptuous where religion is concerned. There's a kind of fervor to them that I understand. I understand certainly the anger where religion is concerned, and maybe the anger in this belief in an alpha male in the sky with a long beard. What I don't understand is the sense of certainty that goes with that. And that's the division I want to make between agnosticism and atheism, because I think although atheists can be really pretty tough on the idea of agnosticism and call it wishy-washy and really be pejorative about their attitude toward agnosticism, I do think that agnosticism has a defense for it, and that's what I'm trying to present.
Let's take a phone call. Here is Ephraim in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I would like to make my comment on religion and the God. When I called to your station, the lady screener asked me, are you an atheist? And asked you, what do you mean by that term? And she asked me, do you believe in God? And I asked you to describe what the God is. And she
My
just
poor
said,
screener.
Okay.
You're giving my poor volunteer screener a hard time. Go ahead.
Right. So we are talking about things we pretend to understand what they mean. And actually, everybody means by God his own thing. And nevertheless, we gang together to pretend that we express the same views and we gather to the same sort of religion.
And Ephraim, I thank you very much. Moving on now to Deborah in Montclair. You're on WNYC. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, thanks. And I want to say thank you to Michael Krasny. I'm a fellow agnostic. My father was an atheist. My mother was an agnostic. By the time I was about 11 years old, I realized all my friends had labels. They were Jewish. They were Catholic. What did I have? I went home and asked my mom. She explained what an agnostic was. It made so much sense to me. And now in late middle age, I'm more than ever comfortable with being an agnostic. However, I've also experienced...
Your parents' marriage lasted? I was just going to ask if your parents' marriage lasted.
A community or a crowd.
Deborah, Michael has a question. Michael, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. What you said, there is some levity to this whole search because Woody Allen once said an agnostic and an atheist got married and it didn't work out because they didn't know what not to raise the kid in. And I was just reminded of that when Deborah described her own parents.
Something like that growing up, yes.
Deborah, go ahead. Finish your thought.
Well, I just feel like although I'm more than ever comfortable being an agnostic, I also have felt that I was missing a larger community of people from which to, say, marry into or share holidays with, that kind of thing.
Thank you for your call. Michael, and we have a few minutes left with Michael Krasny, who actually hosts a program similar to this one in San Francisco on KQED, the public radio station there, called Forum with Michael Krasny, and he's now the author of Spiritual Envy, An Agnostic's Quest. I think the atheists, you know, the militant atheists, the Christopher Hitchens and Richard Dawkins, say that the problem with agnosticism is you're not tough enough on organized religion. Because they say maybe there is, maybe there is, whatever, but that the real message that they want to deliver is that organized religion is a plague upon civilization. You do deal with it, I think, from kind of a, on the one hand, on the other hand, standpoint in your book, right?
Yeah, I do. And I think you're right about, well, Dawkins says that religion is like child abuse, and Hitchens says there should be a war against religion. Almost sounds like an Armageddon in many ways. Hitchens has also said, now that he's sadly dying of esophageal cancer, that if he gets religion at the last moment or something, some kind of Brideshead Revisited moment, don't believe it. It's the chemo that's talking, or the radiation. This is one of the things that concerns me, Brian. I think we need a serious dialogue, not only interfaith dialogue that we keep hearing people vaunt, but also between the atheists and those who are, well, religious. I understand their anger, and I understand it goes to policy, and it goes to the fact that people of religion are often trying to foist and impose and coerce. And also, we have all these pedophile priests in the news, and we have news stories, unfortunately, that show the dark side of religion constantly, 9/11 being the most prominent of all. But I think there is, you know, an argument to be made for what religion does for people. It certainly, when I used to work with prisoners, seemed to turn a lot of their lives around. And I've seen religion take people away from addictions. I've seen it do some good things. It gives people a moral code in addition to giving them solace. The only thing is, when I say there has to be a dialogue, there has to be a dialogue that somehow suggests to us the necessity of religion not foisting and not compelling and not being as dogmatic and as, frankly, ideological or nationalistic as it often is. That's to me the heart of it.
Give me 30 seconds on how you see your job, since you do basically what I do, and people who come here from the Bay Area say, oh, you're the Michael Krasny of New York.
Isn't that funny? I hear I'm the Brian Lehrer of San Francisco. So I think what we both do, I like to hope that what we both do is bring light. Occasional heat, but mostly light.
And one of my producers, Jody Avigon, started as an intern of yours, and you trained him well. Michael, thank you so much. We really appreciate it, and nice to finally talk to you.
Same here. Appreciate you having me on.
Michael Krasny is the author of Spiritual Envy, An Agnostic's Quest. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us. We will continue our series on the roots of English, asking listeners to propose non-English words that are needed in English. We have great examples coming in, and we'll talk to the author of The English is Coming, How One Language is Sweeping the World. Stay tuned.